Okay, good morning. Good morning, everybody. Got a little bit of a different venue this morning, but we'll fulfill what we call Halacha Chavaderech. Okay, we'll see if we can pull this one off. We left off on the bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. So the Gemara was discussing with the status of a non-Jewish owned field is in Eretz Yisrael. So a fundamental question, which we mentioned at the end of the year on Monday, has some very, very serious ramifications for us. If you have land in Eretz Yisrael, so normally the mitzvahs of Trumas, Maaser, Shemitah, etc. apply. The question is, what if it's owned by a non-Jew? So does that automatically revoke the Kedusha? So at the very bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, 2 lines on the bottom, Tashma, Yisrael Zavik Yichom Shmach Masad B'Shutfus. What if a Jew and a non-Jew bought a field together B'Shutfus as partners? So now you're in a little bit of a pickle because Tevel V'chulin M'Ravin Zeh B'Zeh, Divrei Rebbe. According to Rebbe's view, so now every single thing that grows has a little bit of Tevel because the Jewish part is Chayev in Mitzvahs of Shumas and Raisus, and presumably the non-Jewish part is not Chayev. So I have any given apple, so it's half Chayev, half Potter. So that gets very complicated in terms of Tumas and Raisus. How in the world am I going to separate Tumas and Raisus on one half versus the other half? So that's the detail for us. So that's not the part that's relevant for us. The part that's relevant for us is that Rebbe seems to be viewing that whatever belongs to the non-Jew is in fact Potter from Tumas and Raisus, which of course directly impacts that discussion. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, that if you eventually divide it up, so then we will be able to ascertain that half of it was chayev and half of it was butter. So that's already a detailed machlokes. What do you do with this half-baked produce? Do you say that it's forever, it's like doomed to be half and half? Or is there a way to split it up later? That's a question of brayer and all kinds of other complicated svaras. But the point that's relevant for us is with the Gemara's observation, and the third line is, I'd kind of look with the Elder Marasav Yesh Breyer, Marasav Ein Breyer. The whole machlokes is there brayer? Is there not braver? Can we say that when the Jew and the Goy will divide up the produce in a week from now, do we say retroactively it turned out that the part that was what's today the Jews was really his all along, that what's today the Goy's was his all along, and therefore we could actually demarcate what was Chayv, what was Butter, or are we stuck in this Ben Hashmashos, we're stuck in this never-resolved issue of Tevla and Kula mixed in. But again, it's an important machlekes, important detail, but that's not our topic, the Gemara says. But one says, Yesh Breyer was his aim Breyer, Aval the Kuliyama, Yesh Kivim, Kumbir, Solof, Kivim, and Isa. Whereas everybody agrees that ultimately the non-Jews owning of the brothers will revoke the obligation of Jews and Isis. So this is the throwback to the machlekes we had in the previous year. Does the non-Jew have the ability to revoke it or not? It seems from this Bryce that according to Altanoim, the answer to that question is yes, that the non-Jew's ownership will now remove an obligation of Jews and Bryce. The question is no. Hakanami Bisuria, that this Bryce is talking about in Syria. It's talking about in that land that we said is not real Eretz Yisrael. So we mentioned on Monday that the land that's not formally Eretz Yisrael, everybody agrees, is subject to the removal of Kedusha. Why is that so? What managed down Assyria from the rest of Eretz Yisrael? So the question is as far as because some of Kibush Yachid lo Shmei Kibush. Because that Tana, these Tanaim are assuming that land that was conquered by the individual, as great as an individual as David HaMelech was, but David HaMelech was not acting in this role as the Tzibur. And any part of Eretz Yisrael that was conquered, Shalom B'Torah Tzibur, Shalom B'Torah Rabim, does not get endowed with the full Kibush Yachid. So we're back to square one. The one thing we know for certain is that the lower level Eretz Yisrael is subject to removal of Kedusha. The higher level real Eretz Yisrael proper is still unclear. So Gemara tries to bring the Raya now back from our Mishnah. Amar Rav Chibar Abin Toshma, the real roof. Avaychas Adel Yem Gichav, the person sells his field to my non-Jew. Lekeach Umevi Bikrim, Bipnei Tikkana Oilam. He must buy back the fruit from the non-Jew that he sold in order to be able to bring some bikurim. Why is that? B'nei tikkun ha'olam. So okay, that's a big phrase in this context. But b'nei tikkun ha'olam definitely sounds like it's been derabbanan. There's some kind of concern with derabbanan. The Chazal insisted that he buy the fruit back. So answers the Gemara. B'nei tikkun ha'olam b'deraisa. It seems pretty clear from the Mishnah that that's not the ikur din. The ikur din deraisa is that there's no chiv of bikurim. The reason presumably is because it's no longer Jewish owned field, it's no longer Jewish owned fruit, and therefore it's lost Kedushas Haaretz. So a tir from the Lashon HaMishnah, from the back of the Mishnah, sticks in a chiyuv only with the Rabban, for whatever reason, Mitzvah Olam, that implies that Midrash is not. Rav says, no, we have to revamp the Mishnah a little bit. Amar Ravash, Shtei Takanas Abba. There are actually two different stages of developing the Takanas, different than the Rabban that was instituted. The Rabban will just be Korb, sorry. So the Gemara says that actually different stages in history. Nei Kora, Abba Maisa Midrash. Originally, the halacha used to be if a person sold their field to a guy, so they would have to bring Bikurim min HaTorah because it really has Kedushas Haaretz. That's the baseline, and that's the starting point of the Raisa. But then Chazal realized that following that the Raisa is going to lead to problem. What's the problem? That people are going to see that, well, I sold my field to the guy, and what's going to happen? The Shasayim Kaiman. It's the same Kaddish that it was. Last week it was Jewish field that brought me Korb. Now it's a Jewish field that might bring me Korb. So no one's going to think that I did anything terrible. And that's not a good idea because, as we've said, we don't want people to sell the fields in Eretz Yisrael to Goyim for many, many reasons. One of them being that's a Torah prohibition for Los Sechonim. That's Mr. Denizim Muzman Azeh. Not allowed to sell fields, not allowed to sell land to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael even today. So people were violating that Isser. And almost what led them to violate the Issa was the fact that we were telling them that nothing terrible happened. The field is still Kaddish, you're still bringing Bikurim. So Chazal decided, you know what? Let's stop bringing Bikurim. We're going to tell them, don't bring Bikurim, therefore to impress upon people that the land is quote unquote not Kaddish. It's not really true. The land really is Kaddish, but we're going to make people believe. We're going to cause people to have that misunderstanding, thinking the land is not Kaddish, which will have the long term result and then ultimately not selling the land. The problem was that the plan backfired, that the Taquana backfired very fast in the Gemara. I guess that Chazal are trying very hard to play with the psychology of people and try to outsmart the Olim, the Olim's outsmarting Chazal. Eventually, Chazal got the last word in, but it's taking a little while, the Gemara says. So, Kevin the Chazu, the Mandal of Sagile Mezban, then Chazal saw that if they're telling people not to be Bikurim, that people are selling the land in Eretz Yisrael to Goyim. They're violating the Isser. And then what's happening is, if they don't have enough money, people don't have enough money, so they're going to sell it. And then the land's going to end up by the goyim, which is the exact opposite of what we want. Afterwards, at a later date, Chazal made the takana. That's the takana that's mentioned in the Mishnah to bring Bikurim nonetheless. So the fact that we bring Bikurim today, I mean, not literally today, but the fact that the Mishnah relates that land that was sold to a goy is still obligated to bring a Bikurim. This is by far not a simple statement. There were multiple levels and historically what happened here. The Torah have to bring the Bikurim, but the Rabbanim they thought it's a bad idea. Then the Rabbanim they reenacted it to get to the final conclusion. So when all the dust settles in the sugya, in the Gemara itself, it doesn't say explicitly what the final word is, whether there is the ability for a non-Jew to revoke the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. All the Rishon, just about all the Rishon, we assume halacha, that the answer question is that no, that a non-Jew does not have that koach to revoke the Kedusha, with the exception of Surya, as we mentioned on Monday. That was a big machlekes Rishon between Rabbeinu Baruch and the Rambam. Everyone got into this fray about the fact that we're lenient in Surya. Are we lenient in Surya because it's the Rabbanan and that's it? Whenever it's the Rabbanan, then we can say the Kedusha is batel. Or do we say, no, Surya is not really Eretz Yisrael. It's not just as the Rabbanan. It's a lower level type of Kedusha. It's not just that the Rabbanan versus the Raisa. So that was the big machlokes about whether it's even possible to discuss a non-Jew owning land in Eretz Yisrael to get out of Trumas Maisa Shmita, etc. It's interesting that all the issues that were playing out thousands of years ago, the issue of Kedusha's Eretz being batel at the Goyim, the issue of Los Sechonim, of selling land to Goyim in Eretz Israel, all those issues have resurfaced 2,000 years later in terms of the whole Shemitah controversy and all that Mechira. So much of that discussion revolves around what the Maskaras of this Gemara are going to be.
So the Gemara begins the next part of the Sugi Itmar. So the Gemara continues, we learned the following. Hamaychas and the other favors. If Reuven sells his field to Shimon, but doesn't really sell his field, he sells the right to the fruit of the field. That's already a very, very tricky kind of a kid in the first place. Normally we have a rule called, Eino the Mak Mendova Shlova Liom, which I can't say to you, I'm going to sell you the fruit that's going to grow in 6 months from now. So that's not acceptable. Rabbi Meir holds that Adam Kain Mak Mendova Shlova Liom, but we pass it against Rabbi Meir. So it's impossible in the Loch to sell you your your fruit that hasn't come yet. But what you can do is as follows. The Torah recognizes the following kind of a transaction. I don't sell you the fruit proper. I sell you the land vis-a-vis the right to eat the fruit. So you have a kinyan in the land proper, but your practical application of that kinyan will only be concerning the fruit. There's a little bit of a way to circumvent this problem.
So what if I do such a setup with you? I sell you the rights to the fruit. So you have what's called in Allah a kinyan peiros.
You don't have a kinyan at guf. You don't own the gufa of this sata. Let's say, for example, I say to you, I'm selling you my field vis-a-vis eating the rights to the fruit for the next 20 years. And you decide you want to start digging holes in that land. You can't do that. You want to start to build something. You have the right to do that. You don't own the land. You own the land vis-a-vis the rights of the fruit and nothing more. So that's called the Kenyan Peiros.
So the Shaila is, Rabbi Yochanan says that the person who purchased the land vis-a-vis the fruit has an obligation to bring Bikurim.
This fruit. So the Torah says you have to bring approval of corporations. And you read the Parsha of Bikurim as well. We know the Torah says that when you read Bikurim, so you accompany the Bikurim with the Parsha Rami Ovid Avi. So the halacha is you only say the Pesukim Rami Ovid Avi if you mamash on the land, because the Torah says part of that Parsha is Hashem Asat Ali Hashem. You thank Hashem for that piece of land. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no problem, you can say it. Why? Even though you don't quote unquote really own the land, but halachically we apply the principle called Kinyan Peiros Kinyan Aguf Dummy. That the kinyan peiros that you have are as if you have a kinyan aguf, and therefore it would be it's enough, it suffices to own the land to be called to say Asher Atav Hashem. Reish Lakshah maybe and okay, Reish Lakshah is not true. You have to bring the bigurim, but you cannot say those magic words Asher Atav Hashem because it's Moshav, not true. Rabbi Yochanan maybe Kari. Rabbi Yochanan says, why do you have a right, but not right? Why do you have an obligation to bring the bigurim at the same basha? Kinyan peiros kinyan aguf dami. Because the Kinyan Peiros is like a Kinyan Aguf. Reish Lakish or maybe an Okari. Kinyan Peiros love Kinyan Aguf Dami. Reish Lakish says that a Kinyan Peiros is not like a Kinyan Aguf. So vis-a-vis the Peiros you have to bring, but vis-a-vis saying the Vash, you cannot say. This is one of the many, many, many Nefkimidas in Halacha, and this Makhla is Rabbi Reish Lakish. You can even just take a look at the side where the Besar Sashat thing more, because you just want to get a sense at the, how many times this Sugya appears. This Sugya appears six, seven different places in Shas. It's not like it appears with multiple nafkamidas halacha. How do you view this status of Kinyan Peiros versus Kinyan Aguf? Interestingly enough, the Gemara says Yavam at the beginning of the fourth parak. This is one of the three cases that we thought can like Reish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan. 99% of the time we follow Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is Reish Lakish's Rebbe. Rabbi Yochanan is Rebbe. And 99% of the time we follow Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara says three cases we follow Reish Lakish. This happens in one of the three lucky cases. And we thought that Allah Kinyan Peiros is last Kinyan Aguf. The Gemara is going to try to bring proofs back and forth to this issue. So let's talk a little bit about Bikurim. So the Gemara gets segued into this whole discussion about Bikurim. The Gemara begins as follows. Eis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan asked Reish Lakish, he posed the challenge to Reish Lakish. The Torah says, when you bring Bikurim, so you bring Bikurim and your Mesameach together, Ula Veisecha. Veisecha usually refers to one's wife. Like the Torah says, out of that base, so basis of Ishto. Well, I mean, this possible Veisecha teaches me,
Sha'adam Navy Bikurim Ishto Vekoire, that a person brings Bikurim for his wife, and he says the Parsha for that as well. What in the world does that mean? The Bikurim of his wife. So we know when a woman gets married, so she has the option to bring into the marriage multiple kinds of property. Not all property that she brings in from her father's home is all the same in halacha. She can delineate which type of relationship she wants to have. There are basically two different kinds of relationships in terms of property that she brings into the marriage. One is called the Nichse Malug, and one is called Nichse Tzon Barzel. So Nichse his name sounds like it's iron sheet. It basically means that she brings property in, whether the property is land, whether the property is an animal, whatever the case may be. And the husband takes full responsibility for that property. And if the marriage ends by death or divorce, he is going to be held accountable, responsible, pay for what the value of that property originally was. So if it's, she has an insurance policy, she knows she's going to walk out of this marriage with the $10,000 worth of property, whatever it was, in terms of nifsei tzombah. So that's one kind of nifasim. Then there's the other kind of chasim of what we're really talking about here is called nifsei beluk. Nifsei beluk, malay means like the flock, like the pluck a feather off a chicken's called limlog. Nifsei beluk means that she brings in the property. She is basically the owner of the property, and if something goes wrong at the end of the marriage and the property went down in value, it's going to be she's going to have to suffer the loss. He's not insuring anything for her. So what is his relationship to this property during the course of the marriage? He plucks the fruit. He's so let's say, for example, if it's she brings a cow into the marriage, next time along, so he'll be able to get the milk. She brings a sheep into the marriage, he'll get the wool. She brings apple trees into the marriage, he'll eat the apples, etc. So that's what the Gemara is discussing, that the husband does not own the kiddin akum. He doesn't really own the property. Proof positive, if it goes down in value, she suffers the loss, not him. She owns the goof, but he owns the payros. Since he owns the payros, so he's going to bring the kurim from this fruit, from this fruit, from this land. But the question is he going to be able to say the parshas of Bigurim? Can he say with a straight face on his wife's property, Shenasat al Hashem, thank you, Hashem, for giving me this land. This land, I own the land, I own the fruit. So the Bryce says, the Pharisee that he does, that relationship between a husband and wife, Ulubei Secha, other maybe Bikur Ishtav Akari. Tysus points out, just thinking of the Sugya, Tysus says, how could the Torah be speaking about this relationship of Nifsei? But look, this is Sadir Abundant. This is not a Torah mandate. You don't have to have Nifsei Maluk. There's no mitzvah their eyes on this. How's the Torah addressing this? So Taisa says that the Torah speaks about what the reality was. Taisa writes a little Taisa Leisecha, the whole thing is on a mitzvah Rabban. So Taisa says, you're right. It's not a requirement of Torah. But this was Derech Olam, that the Olam used to do this. The Olam had this practice. So therefore, the Torah addresses a cultural practice that was apparently invoked even way, way back in the days of Meshuvah. But the bottom line is, the Gemara says, based on this pasuk, that the husband does read the parasha. So isn't that a raya that kinyan peiros or kinyan haguf? So comes the Gemara and says, no, not necessarily. That's the quirk, that's the exception rule. That was exercised across the Torah says that the relationship that the husband has to the wife, that's different. And that kind of payrus, the husband can bring Bikurim and read the Basha. But you cannot extrapolate from here, you cannot derive from here to any other kind of a payrus. So although this looks like kidney payrus issue, this is different than exercised across the Torah. There are others who present the Machlekish, Rabbi Yechon, Rish Lakish a little bit differently. That not the machlokes but the proof differently. That rather than Rabbi Yochanan bringing this as a proof against Rish Lakish, it was actually the other way around. Some suggest that Eisav Shimon Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. The second lotion is that Rish Lakish asked the question to Rabbi Yochanan. Ulevei Secha Malamish that maybe be Kriyish Tov Bekayre. That you see from this pasuk that the husband can say the parasha for his wife. So that's the Gemara says that's the exception. That was Rish Lakish's raya. Rish Lakish saw this as the exception, and therefore he brought it as a raya. In the first lashon, it was Rish Lakish was on the defense. According to the second lashon, Rish Lakish is on the offense. He's saying, I'm going to prove to you that this is exercised across of, but otherwise that would not be the din. So otherwise, Rabbi Yechon are not correct. So Amalei, Rabbi Yechon responded, time of the din, Ami, Halchus Kamina. He said, no, this is my proof, this is my source. So the Machlekes, Rabbi Yechon, Rish Lakish now relates back to this pasuk. Everybody agrees that the husband has a kinyan peiros in his wife's property. Everybody agrees that the husband brings the bikurim and he says the parasha. Those who agreed upon erechayk lo yavar. The question is, what do we do with that piece, all those pieces of information? So according to Rabbi Yochanan, we say, ooh, if the Torah sets up this model that the husband says the parasha for his wife's property, that may, you see from here, kinyan peiros and kinyan aguf. And we can extrapolate to any and every, all the other 15 cases of Kenyan Paris and Halakha. And therefore, if Reuben buys the field from Shimon, he also has to say the Pasha. So Rabbi Yechon saw on this Pasha the rule, whereas Rish Lakish saw on this Pasha the exception to the rule. According to Rish Lakish, this is Dafka the case that the Torah says to say the Pasha. Dafka, this in contrast to all other cases, because the starting point really is the regular rule in Halakha is Kenyan Paris, Lav, Kenyan Gubdavi. So everybody agrees that this Pasha is related to this discussion.
whether this pasuk is the source or the exception to the source, that's the subject of this machlokes. So eighth phase, the Gemara continues to try to bring a raya's. If a person is going on the way, and he has the bikur of his wife in his hand, and now he hears that his wife died. So now he's yoresh the property. So the halacha is that when a wife dies, so the husband is the number one yoresh. There is a big machlokes. Satanoim is adim in a third, adim in the rabbanon. But according to some, it was based on psukim of last week's parsha, and according to some, it's based on psukim actually this week's parsha as well. But the Torah describes the end of the story of the Bnoslavcha, the very end of Parshas Maaseh. The Torah says that the family members from Shevet Yosef came to complain to Moshe Rabbeinu that if Bnoslavcha would get there what they were entitled to, so they're going to go ahead and get married, and they're going to marry somebody from different Shevet, and the Chelek of Yosef is going to end up becoming part of the Naphtali and Osher. So we don't like that. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, is that all right? And so he said, therefore, they have to marry within their Shevet, because that was a special rush off of that generation. It's not a din for today. If a person knows they come from Shem Reuben, they can marry some from Shem today. There's no Issa. But in that generation, it was Basi Rishas Nachla, so she wasn't allowed to marry out of the Shevet. So the Gemara says in the end of the Basi, you see from all those psukim that the husband has been Yorish. You see that was the concern of the Bnei Yosef. The husband's going to be Yoresh. So you see, there's a dim in the Torah that the husband is Yoresh. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a proof positive. Maybe the son is going to be Yoresh. The son's going to be from the Shevet of the father. So you can't tell absolutely from that pasuk that there's a din of Yerusha Sabal. So the din of Yerusha Sabal is a little bit shaky. It exists. The halacha l'maisa today, of course, it exists. Whether it's Bnei Torah or Bnei Rabbanan, it's up for grabs. So over here, we have a situation where the person was bringing the Bikurim. Then his wife died. And then baby Bikari. Then for sure he brings the Bikurim now. And for sure he brings the Parashah now because these Bikurim are 1,000% his. The Gemara says, Mesa in La Mesa Loi. So the diuk of this bride is that only if she dies he brings the Bikurim and says the Parashah. But if not, then he doesn't say the Parashah. So it sounds like that you don't say Parashah. If Kolzman, you only have kidney favors. After she died, then he gets a kidney. Now, if he's Yorish, then he inherits the entire property. But Kolzman, that she was still alive, all he had was a kidney favors. As a kidney favors, that's not sufficient to recite the Basha. It was no, that's you had the wrong deal, the wrong nuance in the Brisa. Who had the Afaka of the Loy Mesa? The din is that he says the Basha, whether she's alive or not alive. Whether he has a kidney paris or a kidney aguf, it's all the same, says Rabbi Yechanan. Kidney paris is kidney aguf. Well, Mesa is to be halayim. The Brayis had to go out of its way to tell me the case of Mesa for another reason, like I would have thought, Ligdor Mishum de Rabbi Yossi Bechanina. This case of the husband bringing the Bikurim and the wife dies and he gets to bring it, that smacks of a potential problem in a detailed problem in Uchaz Bikurim. The Yom Rabbi Yossi Bechanina. That Rabbi Yosef Bechanina taught us, Bitzvan v'shavan v'yad shaliach. Let's say, forget about the husband and wife. A regular guy, he harvests his fruit. He sends it with a shaliach. You go bring it, Bikurim. Umei shaliach v'deach. Then the shaliach dies, so the guy goes to retrieve the fruit. So maybe, so he brings the fruit, v'yad okay. But he doesn't read the parasha at that point. Why is that? Even though it's his fruit. It's his fruit, he's bringing the fruit. Why is he not reading a Rami Yavir Rami? Shnevo l'kachta v'hevesa. The Torah says that you have to take your Bikurim and bring your Bikurim. The halacha requires that it has to be one person from beginning to end. So I would have thought in this case where the wife was alive at the beginning, then she dies in the middle, I would have thought maybe there's no parsha. Kamash Blunder would be a parsha Bikurim. So when all the dust settles, we are back to square one. What is the halacha? Does a person read the parasha Bikurim by simply having a kinyan peiros? So according to Rabbi Yochanan, the answer is yes. Rabbi Yochanan subscribes to Kol Tarkulot, the principle called kinyan peiros, kinyan hagoftami. Whereas according to Reish Lakish, so the din is that kinyan peiros alav, kinyan hagoftami, except you bring the Bikurim, but you do not say the parasha. The Gemara says that Azul Tamar, this machlekes of Reish Lakish was lishitazam. That this machlokes has presented itself in a little bit of a different nuance of a scenario as well. The Itmar, we learned as the follows.
If a person sells his field at a time when Yovel is applying. So what does that mean? Why does Yovel change anything? So we know that luck is, if Reuben sells a field during the time of Yovel, when Yovel comes, he's going to get the field back. Now, Yovel hasn't been around for about 2,700 years or so, because Yovel is dependent upon all of the Jewish people being in Eretz Yisrael, all the Torah Shvatim, each one in the right place, etc. And that hasn't existed since even well before Bayis Rishon, before the Churban Bayis Rishon. So the end of Binyan Bayis Rishon, when the Aseres HaShvatim was sent into Golos, even before the Babylonians came onto the scene, it was still the Ashurim. So, I just had a discussion with somebody yesterday, 2 days ago. I brought in some suits to a non-Jewish tailor, and the fellow was Italian. So I said to him, "Please, if you could just please finish the stuff before next week." There was a shyla for sending in stuff to get fixed. Like, boy, if the 9 days, I'll come get sorry. So I sent him. So he said, "Oh yeah, yeah, he knew all about it." He said, "He knows the 9 days in the summer. He knows now the work for the Jews." So he said to me. I know the temple was destroyed. And then he says to me, he says, "I know it was destroyed twice." I said, "Yeah, you're right." I guess his last Jewish customers had told him. So he said to me, that "I remember who destroyed the second time. I don't remember the first time." He says, "I remember it was the Romans." He tells me. He says, "I'm from Rome." He said, "I remember it was the Romans." That's what he said to me. He said, "I'm from Italy. I remember the Romans did it the second time. Who did it the first time?" Then the Babylonians said, "Okay, good. All right, that was it. You don't want the..." He was happy about that. Happy, whatever it is. Anyway, So the Pesukim and Shem Alachim tell us that even quite some time before the Babylonians even came onto the scene, the Assyrians, the Ashurim, so they came and destroyed the whole northern part of Eretz Israel, and they sent all the Assyrians Shvatim into Golas. At that point, so then Yovel ceased to exist, because the Torah says, "Across the Drol Arts the Chol Yoshveha, is Banchika Yoshveha Leha." You have to have all the Jews and all the Shvatim and all in their right places, and that doesn't exist anymore. Therefore, there's no real Yovel. But in the old days, the early days, back in the days when Yovel was knowing, so the halacha was that when Reuben sells a field to Shimon, he's not really selling him the field. Shimon's not going to keep the field. Shimon's going to have to return the field in 20 years from now. The only thing that Shimon has is a Kenyan Peros. So every case of Mechira Sodas, the Zman Shai Yovel knowing, is the halachic equivalent of a Kenyan Peros. So the same way that was Machlekes, Rabbi Yechon, Rish Lakish, about a Kenyan Peros of let's say I'm selling your land and selling your field in Kansas, so you can have a Kenyan Peros issue. Every field, every Mechira in Eretz Yisrael, B'zman Shai Yovel knowing, is always by definition going to be merely a Kenyan Peros. So the Gemara says that the same exact Machlekes Rabbi Yechon and Shlokish about what do you do if I sell you a field, not B'zman Shai Yovel, say today, there's no Yovel, I sell you a field in the Shomron today, and I specify a Kenyan Peros, that is the same halacha as if I would have sold you a field 2,800 years ago, even though I didn't specify it's Kenyan Peros. It is, it's objectively a Kenyan Peros, because it's Ban Shei Yovel Nayik. The Gemara says the exact same halacha disappears. So on the top of Crescent Aleph, Rabbi Yechon Amar Mevi, so once again, not a great surprise. Rabbi Yechon says you bring the Bikurim and you read the Parsha. And Rish Lakish says, yeah, you bring the Bikurim, but you don't read the Parsha. Why is that? Rabbi Yechon maybe the Kore. Rabbi Yechon says, your baby and your Kore. Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf Dami. Because according to Rabbi Yechon, Kinyan Peres is Kinyan Aguf. And therefore, you could say with a straight face, Hashem Asat Li Hashem. Rish Lakish maybe in a Kore. Rish Lakish says, no, you can't say that with a straight face. Why can your parents laugh? You can't get goof, dummy. Because can your parents not get a goof? And then you can't say with a straight face, Damash, and Asata Li Hashem, it's not yours. It's just, you really have the rags to eat the fruit. Moses says, it's the same machlekes, it's the same issue again. What's the difference between a formal or an official Kenyan Peros today and every Kenyan, Bizban Shayomal, no egg, is always by definition a Kenyan Peros. Why do the you have to repeat the machlekes? It's the exact same issue. But says, no, it's not exactly the same. We need both. Maybe Rish Lakish only said that Kenyan Peros and not Kenyan Aguf. That's if I'm delineated, I spell it out, I'm buying the field for Peros. Babaach, in the case of the Yovel, the Adaita, the good thing enough is, I'm going out to the field. I think I'm buying the field. I don't know all the numbers. I forgot that says about Shbahar. I didn't realize that Api Alocha, that every Mechir is not a Yovel, is almost by default that Kiddush Paris is only. But that's not what my intention was. So maybe Rabbi Yochanan, which not sort of agreed to Rabbi Yochanan. And if he had done Rabbi Yochanan disagreed, and he said that this man Shayovel Noe could be the Parsha, but how come Rabbi Yochanan? That's only over there, because in the same spot that he went in thinking he's getting kidnapped off. Babach, the Imam is said, black on white, I'm only getting a kidnapped. Even among the Rish Lachish, I would think that maybe he would agree to Rish Lachish. So Tricha. So bottom line is the Gemara says that although the issues are the same, being the same, it doesn't mean they're absolutely identical. There are svaras to say, maybe a little bit of a split between the two. So but at the end of the day, the machlokes stands. If there's a running machlokes of Rish Lachish, the machlokes begins in the Bikurim. And that's two applications, the classic selling fields, more with Manche Yamanog selling fields. And again, it's going to spill over to other issues as well. Wrap it up. Okay. Wish everyone a good day. Okay. I'm sorry for the last minute to change, but after a little bit of a simcha, which is by luck, me and Henry have the same simcha. So we worked out good. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you so much for it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.